This is podtech.net. I'm Catherine Girardeau at the Gartner Symposium at San Francisco's Moscone West. During the conference, we sat down with Gartner's VP for Research, Alan Weiner, to talk about trends in digital media. In this podcast, you'll learn a bit about Weiner's areas of research, including what he calls digital media titans. You'll also hear about Weiner's theory of super enablers and what he sees as the biggest opportunities and challenges in Web 2.0. In the interest of full disclosure, Weiner is a fellow podcaster. Well, listen in. He'll tell you.
I am Vice President for Research in the media space, the media vertical, and I cover a huge range of topics going from the world of publishing, both digital and otherwise, the world of search, the web portals. I cover arcane areas of a subject called asset management, which are actually becoming in vogue at the moment. And then I'm responsible for a research thread that I started with a colleague 3 years ago called Digital Media Titans, which is essentially a rewriting of what it is to be a media company. And we've produced a series of documents to look at all of the dynamics that are changing the marketplace, user behavior, new technologies, new devices, and so on.
I think that would be a really good place to start, actually. I was at TyCon and, you know, listening to a lot of the keynotes and so on.
I was there too.
And yeah. So I wanted you to talk about the convergence of content and this explosion of digital mobile devices and what trends you see, what opportunities and challenges there.
It's difficult to imagine, but devices are essential to any company's strategy. Yet they're essentially the most complex to figure out. You know, some of the best devices out there lack some of the really crucial things to make them, you know, really powerful partners for media companies. One of them would be security and portability because of formats. Using a particular format, in essence, locks you down to certain kinds of devices. Now, in the case of Apple, they've been very successful because their format works on the iPod, and iTunes is a very powerful delivery ecosystem. But other companies are really having difficulty matching that same success. Windows Media happens to be the format du jour of all the Hollywood companies, the TV networks, because of its security and that it's available to be licensed and is secure. But there really is not a powerful set of devices that are being ubiquitous out there. So today, there are essentially two sets of ubiquitous devices. There are the iPods in all its various flavors, and there are handsets in all of its various flavors. And today, you know, the iPods are certainly leading the handsets because, you know, the handsets are often attached to networks which are a little bit flaky and don't work as well as the internet on demand. And they're also run in conjunction with services run by wireless carriers who, for the most part, don't know that much about content. So they're still feeling their way. So all of this makes devices a very important part of any media company's strategy, but a little bit cloudy because they're not exactly sure how the landscape will evolve. I mean, will Microsoft, for example, this year come out with a set of devices that will not only play for sure, but play securely and have the ability for the consumer to get content from his desktop to that device as simply as you can get it from your iTunes to your iPod.
And I also see a certain amount of confusion among content creators and content providers at how best to take advantage, like trying to sort of jump on the bandwagon of all these devices, but not being really sure what to put on them.
It's a format issue. Formats are pretty bizarre. So like you know, I'm a content creator myself, and I've played with a variety of formats. And some of them can be very perplexing because if your ultimate goal is to get it on a device, you know, if you want somebody to download your podcast or video blog or video podcast, it needs to be in a format that's compatible with a particular device. Well, not all video cameras, for example, shoot all formats. So my favorite little camera shoots an MPEG-4. little handy-dandy Sanyo, you know, hybrid camera. So, for starters, you're limited in your editing capability. You can only use iMovie, or you can use Adobe Premiere 2.0. But if you use, you know, one of the MPEG flavors, certainly you have more options, but the files are huge, and to get those on the internet takes a lot of effort. Yeah, and you can make those secure, and you can't make the MPEG 4 one secure, so it is just, you know, a world that's emerging, and all of the service providers and software companies and device companies are spending a lot of time trying to figure out how it's all going to fit together, which certainly doesn't, you know, put a lot of empowerment into the hands of content creators.
Do you see, looking into the future, more coordination and collaboration between device makers and content creators?
So we have this kind of theory that we've put forth, Mike McGuire and myself, that we call super enablers. And we just actually finished a report on it. And a super enabler is a company that has a powerful ecosystem that covers three key areas. The ability to give people the ability to publish. And I'm not necessarily saying give them the tools for creation, but give them the easy on-ramp, you know, the uploader, the ability to just take your content and very easily get it onto the ecosystem. And second would be the distribution. You know, that could be viral, it could be, you know, through a network or what have you. And the third is the device strategy. Some of these companies will do this through things that they own themselves. Apple is a great example. And today, you know, Apple and Microsoft are really the only two big super enablers. But then you've got companies who have hands in little bits and pieces of all those areas. Some of them, you know, in two areas, some in one, working with partners in others. And how these parts of the ecosystem connect together to create super enablers is going to be what drives this industry.
Yeah, there's also kind of a question about commercialization and opportunities for the enterprise versus more community-oriented opportunities for Joe Q Public.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, the enterprise is money. And it's interesting, if you go back, I don't know, 10, 12 years, look at a company like Netscape. So Netscape started off as a company very consumer-facing with web browsers and all of that. But then, you know, a couple years into its life, it said, well, I want to make money today. You know, how am I going to make money today? Well, let's target the enterprise. Let's make an ecosystem for the enterprise. Let's have servers. And probably only those people who are as tired and veteran as I am would remember that actually Netscape was partners with GE Information System in an EDI company, whose name escapes me for the moment. But a lot of these consumer-facing companies who have these kind of long waits for consumer return look to the enterprise for immediate, you know, ROI on today's technology, because essentially the technology is transferable. It's not built just for consumers or built just for enterprises. They actually interoperate pretty simply.
Right. So there's no problem with enterprise developing stuff, and then consumers sort of jump on and adapt its uses.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, look at how email evolved. I mean, email evolved for people using it in the workplace. And then all of a sudden, someone had a brilliant idea. Let's create this, you know, free email service. Let's call it Hotmail. And then give people the ability who, like, want to go looking for a job and don't have the, and they don't want that piece of email living on their company's server. Let's give them this free account that will give them that, you know, alternative option. So, you know, the sad thing about email is it's now become a 24-hour-a-day addiction to most people. And it's still, you know, the most popular thing on the internet and how most people communicate, and email moves forward is probably a whole nother subject.
Yeah, what do you see are the biggest new areas of development in Web 2.0?
So Web 2.0, and we're giving a presentation on this Thursday, has two vital elements to it. I mean, there's the technology behind Web 2.0, some of which has been around for a while. It's, you know, RSS and XML and you know, and other flavors of XML and Java, elements of Java, as well as Ajax, trying to think of Ajax, right. So, you know, that's part of it. And then it's how it's implemented. And, you know, there's social communities and there's, you know, viral distribution. And I think viral distribution is still in its infancy. That, to me, is the biggest thing about Web 2.0. And we've seen some pretty interesting little proof points along the way about how powerful this could be. So everybody's familiar with, you know, various videos that have become, you know, hugely popular. So there's the video that the kid did from Maryland. I think he's either a high school or college age student who did this takeoff on MySpace. And it got like 42 million views through viral distribution. So people, you know, found the video and the various services, the YouTubes, the Revers, the V-Socials, all provide these, quote, Web 2.0 links and tools to allow individuals to virally transmit them through an email, posting on a blog. So it just becomes this, like, you know, it takes off on a life of its own.
Now, and it's free.
And it's free. Here's what's interesting is I think that same viral distribution element is going to make its way into other content. And I think how branded content companies take advantage of viral distribution is going to be pretty important. So I'm sure the folks at NBC hate the fact that people rip off Saturday Night Live clips and they put them up on YouTube or VSocial. Less YouTube, which is a whole other subject right now, as they try to clean up their act. More, you know, the VSocials and Revers of the world. And NBC must hate that. So NBC actually started a site where you can go and look at clips from your favorite. But they're missing something. There's no viral capability. So if NBC, using its own servers or partner servers, give people the ability to grab those clips that are NBC branded, NBC controlled, and could be monetized by NBC, then put them on their blogs, they'd be off to the races. And why can't newspapers do the same thing? And I know podcasters are going to do the same thing. So, you know, I think that the words embedded player are going to be pretty vital to our lives moving forward. And today, you know, an embedded player has to do with viral transmission of video. I think everything should have an embedded player because I don't really want to rip somebody off. I'd like to take advantage of their brand and, you know, I may want to take a comment on it or some other kind of riff. But let them have the credit and let them, people want to see, you know, how it exists in its native environment. Give them the link and let them go do it. So
right.
I think that's the biggest thing about Web 2.0. I think, you know, you didn't ask, but the biggest challenge for Web 2.0 to me is there are so many new Web 2.0 communities. And like you, I was at the TaiCon conference and somebody came out with a number. Actually, it was one of the VCs who said that he's got 136 Web 2.0 deals sitting on his desk. And, you know, I'm certainly not in that space, but I must get 5-10 calls a day from new Web 2.0 communities who want to tell me about what they're doing. Well, you know, Catherine, here's the issue. They all don't interact. So for each one, it requires separate logon, separate password, separate sandbox to play in. And they all might be wonderful, but who has the time to operate what I call an interrupt mode? It doesn't fly. So, you know, sadly, if I were to kind of predict, it's no doubt going to be the Googles, the Yahoos, the AOLs, and the MSNs who have the big honking opportunities who wind up controlling a lot of this social tagging, social bookmarking, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the world is different now than it was during the first, you know, the big dot-com bust. A lot of the failure was businesses, you know, spending too much money, marketing poorly, well, spending too much money on marketing, essentially, and having not a clue or a vision as to when they're ever going to turn dime one into their business. I think it's a little bit different now. I don't think companies spend the way that they do. I think they're operating leaner and meaner, and I think as such, they become far more attractive targets for bigger fish. So we have this slide that has, you know, big fish eating little fish. And I think that that's what's going to happen. I think a lot of companies who are, you know, emerging into this Web 2.0 space aren't necessarily looking to go public and become the next, you know, Mark Cuban. They're hoping to be part of the Google ecosystem or Yahoo or AOL and, you know, get a good job and a nice check and a beautiful future. I sadly think that that's the world that we're living in today.
Yeah.
You know, I do talk with companies every day. Say, well, I'm going to be the next Google. And
good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Indeed.
So for my last question, I wanted to ask you a little bit about all the legal stuff that's going on around ownership of content. And
well, I certainly don't think, I mean, that is, there's a big business element in there. So most of the TV companies, for example, you know, you may wonder, if you look at ABC.com and CBS's new InnerTube project and, you know, the other things that are coming out, and you say, that's interesting. I wonder if ABC is building that themselves or if they're working with some partners. Or you might say, gee, I'm wondering why NBC chose to do that themselves as opposed to developing a partnership with, say, Google. Well, the answer is pretty simple, and it's about the content itself. The network television stations, film studios, whatever, are reticent to work with third parties because they fear the Napsterization of their content. So a lot of the reason that some of these projects are being started in-house, Nickelodeon's Motherlode, MTV Overdrive, and so on, these are in-house projects because these companies are not that comfortable with sharing their assets with third parties because, well, in essence, their assets are not all they have. So there is tremendous fear still over ownership of content. And it's making its way down to the long tail. It really is. People who are consumer creators who elevate from, you know, the swinging cat videos to doing things that are of some significance are going to want some sort of protection. And maybe it's not, you know, a monetization path, but they just want to have some mechanism that's going to allow them to get credit or not be ripped off or to be mentioned. And I think that's a huge opportunity. And I think you're going to see the Adobes of the world, the Microsofts of the world, be able to do that in a mechanism that gives a creator the ability to allow his content to be virally shared. But before you can share it, I need to know who you are and give you some element of permission, whether it's a certificate or public key thing or whatever. So,
or maybe you pay me some sort of licensing fee to use my content in a certain way.
Well, this becomes an interesting and very big issue in some of the new, quote, syndication opportunities that are emerging where, you know, in the Bright Cove model, you take my show and you put the player on your blog and then you get a piece of the revenue stream because you're actually syndicating my content, which is a brilliant idea. But do I get the opportunity to say, I don't want my content on that blog? That doesn't represent, you know, my ideals. You're just, you know, looking to rip me off and make some money. You've got a web page, you're filling it with a bunch of content only so, you know. So that becomes an issue. I mean, it's some of it's security, some of it's identity management. They all kind of come together. And a lot of that is going to be pretty important to the evolution of this marketplace.
Is there anything you want to say in closing that I didn't ask?
I love your podcasting gear here. I mean, I think it's pretty cool for those of you who are listening in. Pretty neat little gizmo here. I wish I had one.
It sounds great.
It does.
Believe me, it's totally clean. Here, let me give you the headphones for a second. And I'm just going to say before I do that this is podtech.net. And I want to thank you, Alan Weiner, for being on the podcast.
Hey, can I give a plug to my
Absolutely,
podcast?
Absolutely, please.
Okay. So I do a podcast in conjunction with my colleague, Mike McGuire. It's called the Madcast, which stands for Mike and Alan's Drivel, which people don't really figure out. And you can find it at the media blog that Mike and I run, which is called What's On Tonight. It's What's On Tonight, all one word, .blogware.com.
And it's both informative and entertaining.
There you go. All for the price of one.
Here, let me give you a sense of the sound.
Oh, it does sound pretty cool.